bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show.
Look, there's four of us. How cool's that? Starting top left to deliver the week's photographic news to you, such as it is a very sick Chris Forsman. How you doing, old bud?
Sorry.
You feeling rough?
I am pretty rough.
We've just done an experiment because of the green hue on the screen there, and we thought it was his laptop, but it didn't change when he moved the saturation control. So,
yeah.
Now, the wall's gone yellow. Chris is still green. You're sick, man. You're sick.
Yeah. Not very nice, is it?
How was CES?
It was CES.
It was boring shite.
Yeah.
No price, no date.
Yeah.
You said you were doing this last year and you still haven't brought it out.
What's that?
You said you were doing it last year and you still haven't brought it out. That's all that seems to be there. This is what we said we were going to do last year and you still haven't brought it out or a price yet, so.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a concept show. It's like the Geneva Motor Show. It's pointless. You'll never drive anything that's there. Carl's on mute, obviously. Good, well-covered-up cough. Perfectly good, pal. Off mute now because Carl Madden is joining us, our interested amateur this week.
I'm very interesting, so I'm told by certain police authorities.
Yeah, of interest is different.
Yes, thanks for press-ganging me into the show. Thank you very much.
You don't have to. You can go if you want. And last but by no means least, the other fellow pro photographer, Alex G. Fox.
Good afternoon.
How you doing, bud?
I'm okay. I'm warm.
Great big show last night. Fantastic pick, mate, at the end.
I got ripped out shreds for that. So anyone that has...
Well, you just... The concept was what your pick was, not the application.
Yeah, but it sort of got sidelined.
It kind of got overridden by... Fiona Bruce, and holy hell, Alex has picked the Antiques Roadshow as his pick.
Yeah, even I, when I think back on it, could have produced a slightly better angle on it.
But exactly. The spin wasn't quite there, was it, mate?
No.
I've picked the BBC Antiques Roadshow app. Oh.
When eventually I managed to get a word in edgeways, my principle became, agreed with. But yeah, I'll give you that I should have... thought it through a bit better.
Right, the week's photography news. Nikon have brought out, that's a D600 because I couldn't find a picture of a D5200, but Nikon have brought out a D5200. There we go. It follows on from the D5100, which I gather you've got, haven't you, Carl?
I have indeed.
Who told you to buy that rubbish?
Oh, I don't know. There was this show called, the Photo Show on the Bagel Tech Network. I don't know. And these people on there said that's a very good camera to get. So I went and followed their advice. What a mug I am.
I don't know. It took decent pictures the day of the photo.
No, I'm not joking. It was fantastic. It's a really good, sturdy camera. And I was really pleased with the results. The only problem is it's a full-size camera, well, it is for me anyway. So I'm a very lazy, lazy person, as you may know. And I just like walking around with my iPhone in my pocket. I'm going to take pictures with that. Unless if I went somewhere specific, like a photo walk, I'd take Nikon with me. But the results were very good. So are they saying, how much better would you say from the review is this better than the one I purchased?
Well, this is, so here's the specs then. This is full 1080p video, which is 1920 by 1280, according to the article, but I think that's got to be a typo. At 25 frames a second, high resolution 3-inch LCD monitor on the back, 100 to 25600 ISO, and 5 frames per second in burst mode.
It's gone up to 24.1 megapixels as well.
Okay, right. Costs are coming out at £719 body only, or with a lens kit for the 18-55, which is probably a very passable lens at £819. Amazon currently is giving it at £645, according to it, and Wexler's giving it at £688. So,
what are Jessup's offering it at?
HMV, I think. That's going to be, what, $900, $850-ish, something like that, perhaps?
Yeah. I mean, I'll start just on the fact that, you know, I'm going to start. I looked at this and I thought, you know, the 5100 was a good camera. Have they done anything specifically better? Yeah, the video is a bit better and obviously the sensor's a bit better. But what I think they've done, they've built on a pretty sturdy starting point and, you know, just brought it up to, you know, equivalent level. It's sort of, it's not a D7000 and a 7000, yeah, it's not a D7000 yet. And it's a better and the 3000 range. I think for the money, you're getting an awful lot of camera. And I looked at some of those test shots and funny enough, which sort of contradicts a lot of what I've said before, either they haven't processed the raw images particularly well on this article or the JPEG is really, really, really good on this camera. But even that, you know, the 2500 or 25,000, whatever it is, ISO, it was a passable picture, which I thought, you know, for £600, £600+ for a camera is pretty remarkable.
I think that is a key point, to be honest, Alex. The raw 25-600 image is just lousy.
Yeah.
But it's not horrifically lousy.
No.
It's just lousy.
The JPEG, which makes me think maybe they didn't process the image particularly well. But if you look at the JPEG equivalent on that, which is basically the camera doing everything and you not doing anything.
Yeah.
I tell you what, you're going to be able to get pictures in situations, you know, we talk about the nightclub camera. You stick it on 2500, I don't even know what it is, I can't remember what it is, but 25,000 ISO in a, you know, an extremely dark area, you're going to get pictures that might actually, you know, be sharp or, you know, it won't have loads of blurred movement on it. So for that reason, I think for a camera of this price, especially say you go to do someone's wedding, obviously you've got the option of sticking a flash on, but on these cameras, flash only works up to about 8 feet away. So say you're in a church without any flash on, this camera is going to get you some shots, whereas most cameras aren't. So that's where that's my starting point for this. It's got, what do they call it? A reticulated back screen. So you can hold it above your head and see various angles. Articulated, well done. And, you know, so it's got everything you need at a reasonable price to get shots in situations where 2 years ago you wouldn't have even dreamed of being able to get a shot. Mm-hmm. That's sort of where I'm at.
Excuse me. The raw image at 25600 is that, if you're looking at the video podcast. And that's like a bad case of measles. And that's the JPEG. And the measles are still there, but it's done a much better job of equalising the image, no question. Yeah. And I've got to say, the one thing that I found, I've been out at a lot of low light stuff just lately with work. And with the 6D, I've noticed that when I was out last weekend, I thought, I'm just going to shove it on automatic and see what happens. Stuff the P even. I'm just going to put it on automatic. And I stuck it on automatic, and it took a great image. It was JPEG when it outputted it. It didn't output it raw in automatic. Mm-hmm. Got it back on the laptop. It was a decent quality image. There was not a lot of grain in it at all. Tried to reproduce that in raw, and I couldn't achieve the same.
No, it's funny, isn't it?
Standard.
But it's one of the things which, you know, again, goes against things we've said before. When you've got 24 million pixels to play with as opposed to sort of 10 in the old days. If you've got a grainy, spotty, measly image, if you're going to take something, let's say 24 million pixels and print it for a 10x8, those dots are going to be so small that you get away with a lot more than you would have got away with before. So, you know, there's a lot of trickery going on this to get a decent image, but, you know, I think for the price, I didn't know if they'd be able to produce anything sort of lower than the 600 that was of a usable quality more than just complete amateur range. But I think this camera's managed it.
Any comments, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think critically what they've done here is, you know, the few a good camera is 16 megapixel and, you know, it had a good focusing system and things like that. But they've basically shoved in the same focusing system from the D7000. Into here. So, I mean, you've got a much more improved focusing system, a more improved metering system. And in addition to that, you've got the, you know, almost double the resolution. And you're not sacrificing really low light capability. It's like, it's like an improved resolution along with improved technology. So you're getting, you know, you're still getting that low light capability. It's a pretty impressive package. I got to handle a prototype at CES, a working prototype. And it felt pretty good. It for me, it was a little small. It was a little plasticky. You know, I'm used to a little bit tougher camera. So, you know, like if I had a criticism, that would be it. But that's only a criticism if you're used to much bigger cameras, really. So, it was a solid camera.
I do have a criticism, though. And it is a major criticism.
Too many buttons?
No, it's even worse than that. They have a functionality on it called Quiet Shutter. And when they were talking about in this article, they were saying they've suppressed the shutter noise so much that why would you need a quiet shutter function on this? So if they've made the shutter quieter and more girly, you might as well buy a Canon.
Oh,
camera.
See, that's the thing. When you take the piss out of him, he waits, and then boom.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've got that. Carl, any thoughts, mate? I mean, you liked the 5100, didn't you?
I did. I'm quite shocked at its price because I didn't pay anywhere near 700 quid for my camera.
No, yours was about 550, yeah, wasn't it?
It was sub 500 quid, if I remember.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite elite. So this is the camera that's going to totally replace my one, correct? Correct?
It's a step up from yours, I would say. It's not a replacement in the line.
Okay.
It does replace the 51, does it not?
Yeah, but I think the 32 is the one that's really akin to the old one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got better specs than my one and much higher megapixel rate, but we all know that doesn't matter so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I can shoot 1080p on mine. I think it's 720.
Mm.
Tried it, but there's lots of those specs.
I've got to say, that's what I thought when I was reading that out, that yours was 720.
Mm-hmm. But no, mind you, the pictures they've got on this article, the red looks like see-through red plastic case. I'm not too sure about that.
Well, you're saying the saturation's not right?
No. You've seen the page one of the article. It's sort of the camera casing is sort of red see-through, it seems to me.
All right, yeah, they've got three different colours on this, haven't they?
Mm-hmm. It just makes it look really plasticky and cheap. I don't.
Well, yeah,
I saw it is a brown plasticky. One at CES.
It is plasticky and cheap.
Oh, right, thanks.
So that's yeah.
700 quid? So what would you say this is aimed at? Middle entry level, just like my one?
Well, I think they've got one of the things Nikon have done, they've got a range lower than this, which starts in the 3000 range. So I wouldn't say this is your first jump into digital photography DSLR. I'd say this is for somebody that can't warrant spending sort of £1,000 on a camera. But, you know, £700, give it 6 months, you're going to be getting this for £550, £600. And it's an awful lot of camera for 600 quid. It's a lot of camera for 600 quid.
Yeah, so. Lowest price at the moment showing is 591.
All right, so you know, might be talking about £500 in 6 months. Yeah, right?
But when you click it, it goes to 688. So I think that's, you know, best of luck finding that deal. It's like most of Google shopping. You click on it, and then all of a sudden, there's £300 of postage on it.
But one of the things that also says for a camera like this, if you've got an old, I don't know, D40, D60, D80, D90. Your lenses and everything are, you know, they're standard DX lenses. They're going to work perfectly well with this. And what you'll find is this is your upgrade from a 3-4-5-year-old Nikon digital DSLR. This is sort of where it's aimed at. It's for the people that didn't bother going to the 5100 because it wasn't enough of a jump from what they already bought 3 or 4 years ago. But this really is enough of a jump to say, okay, it's time to invest in my next level of Nikon DSLR camera. I don't think it's a starting point, but I think it's a move up the ladder.
So, I mean, let's say Carl's sitting going, well, okay, I do enough for my photography that I would like to have a better camera than my 5100. Instead of leaping up the line to the 7000 or beyond, he should leap to the 5200?
No. I think the 5100 is still comparable to this enough not to spend the money and buy a new one. If you've got something like a 12 megapixel, a D90, there's anything from the 3000 range as well. I'd say Carl is high enough up this ladder for this not to be his next step. He would really need to go to the 7000s and things like that. This is for somebody on the 3000 range or anything that was the two-digit range before this new set of cameras came up.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, I've kind of got a parallel here with the D600 because that was kind of a little watershedy change for Canon. They went from that very cheap model that you could see was just not good enough, and all of a sudden the D600 just was good enough. It took great static images. It did good, very good 1080p video, which is why I bought it. And this seems to be the kind of same kind of thing. It's given much more of the round functionality of the higher spec models, but in the lower price bracket.
Yeah, I mean, another thing about this range of cameras in all manufacturers, it's a family camera, as in I couldn't give somebody that didn't know photography my cameras to use because there is no auto functions on them or anything like that. You have to have a basic understanding. But if you had a family where someone was interested in photography, let's just throw everything the wrong way around. Say the mother was interested in photography and this was her camera. They could still hand it to the father that really didn't know much about photography and he could still get a good picture. And your teenage kids could still use this camera and get a good picture. It's that sort of range where you can enjoy photography and do things quite professionally with this, but it's still got the ability to be backward compatible, if you like. And people that have no knowledge of photography can still use it and get an excellent shot out of it. It's that camera.
Yeah, I mean, Chatterin's just reminding me, I've just said D600 and what I meant was 600D, sorry.
Yeah, also, Pete said the D5100 is 1080p.
Well. It is, right. Thank you, Pete.
There you go.
Very good. Jessup's has said that it will honour all of its orders. If you placed an online order with them, or if you've placed an order for delivery of something and then prepaid for it, they will ensure that you get it. They are responding to customers' concerns, and CEWE Managing Director Duncan Midwood said, "We would like to reassure customers that we intend to honour all outstanding Jessup's orders, and we continue to work closely with the administrators to process these as quickly as possible." So well done to Jessup's for actually not running away with the money, unlike HMV. There's also an article kicking around that says that the downfall of Jessup's in the UK could herald a bit of a renaissance for the independent camera shops.
Yeah, I read that article. I mean, I'd love it to be true, but to be honest, I don't think so at all. I think there's going to be a slight jump. It's at Dixon's at the moment. They were coming out with 8%. Christmas, you know, we did really well at Christmas, 8%. Well, your main rival just went under before Christmas. You're bound to get a bit of a boost because of 50% of the customers in the country haven't got anywhere to go. And I think that might be what's happening with these small independent people. They've got a bit of a boost because of, you know, the people that would have gone to Jessup's aren't ready to look at the alternatives on the internet and places like that. But you know, a lot of those people will learn about the convenience of buying from Amazon, Wex or whoever online. They're not going to get Jessup's customers. There wasn't many customers that went to Jessup's, and I don't think many of those are going to be bothered to. They're going to say, okay, right, I've lost the battle. Let's try and find out what everyone else is doing and why it's so much easier to do the other thing. It's going to force most of these people into the hands of the internet only providers. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a shame. I really wish it was, you know, these people were right, but I think they might be just counting their chickens a bit early.
Yeah. I mean, how's the Jessup's thing looked in the States, Chris? Have you even followed it at all, or is it kind of like, meh?
Well, I mean, you know, we've had a similar situation here with, you know, Wolf and Ritz Camera. And they were a huge chain, and I want to say early like 2000-ish, they merged, and for a couple of years, and they were really huge, and they were all over the country, and then started to go into bankruptcy, and then kind of made that out of that, and were kind of floating, and they closed a bunch of locations, consolidated, and were going along fine, and now they're pretty much dead in the water. And I think the local Ritz Camera I used to go to here in Chicago got taken over by Calumet, so now it's like a an extra Calumet location.
Right. But I mean,
changed.
So you've just seen other chains step in and you haven't seen anyone, no camera shops have benefited, local camera shops have benefited from the demise of the chain.
Well, not really, because the demise of this huge chain has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, people aren't going in and buying film and having prints done all the time like they used to. Even now, so many people like don't even print pictures anymore, so they're not getting their ink cartridges or their photographic printing paper and things like that. The local camera shop I used to work at in my hometown just closed down in December and had been open for 53 years, maybe longer, 63 years. I can't remember exactly. I mean, it was open way before I was born. I worked there for 10 years and, you know, I saw that transition from film to digital happen, I could see it definitely, like, it hurt our bottom line, a bit when, you know, these pros who were shooting 20 rolls of film at a wedding started shooting digital and they weren't coming in and doing anything anymore except to, you know, maybe ask to see the new latest digital model or rent a lens or something like that. So it definitely changed our business and, you know, we worked really hard to adapt and we had sensor cleaning services we would offer. We'd offer classes on how to use the cameras because, let's face it, I mean, digital cameras are a lot harder to use than analog equivalents. Even if you have an understanding of photography, I mean, they can be pretty complex with all the different settings and features and buttons and things. So, you know, we really had to kind of change how we did our business and, you know, for the area we were in, that still wasn't enough. You know, a lot of our business was still, doing like helping out schools. So schools that have photography programs were still doing black and white film and printing. So we did all the supplies and chemistry for that. And eventually those schools cut those programs or switched to digital, you know, because that was just more cost effective and frankly, more, I guess, realistic. You know, if somebody's going to learn these skills, very rarely are they going to shoot black and white film, develop themselves and make their own prints from it. They're going to be shooting a digital camera and editing in Photoshop. So, you know, realistically, it was smarter for those classes to move to digital. And, you know, people were shopping for their cameras on Amazon. You know, so it's almost like the local camera shop is in a lot of areas just become like this anachronism that nobody even really remembers anymore. Which it's sad in a way, I think, but
it's the evolution.
That's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, where I am, we have two independent camera shops. And the thing is, they hardly ever open, and they get by with selling grey imports. That's how they make their money. They jump on a plane to Hong Kong, and they bring back a caseload of Hong Kong-priced cameras. And that's just what goes on. That's the only independent, you know, there's two of them around here. That's the two independent shops. That's what happens.
Yeah, I mean, when I was looking at the 6D, I could get grey imports fairly readily, but, I mean, I've been caught out by that in the past.
No, so. I mean, I don't use them. Okay, very occasionally, I need a particular lens, and I nearly said his name, I'll phone him up and say, look, I really don't fancy going into the West End. You know, have you got one of these? Can you get me one for tomorrow? And, you know, he's no cheaper than anyone else. He tends to be slightly more expensive, but, you know, he hasn't got the ability to, you know, cut me a deal on things because he can't buy anything in bulk. But, I mean, that's all that's happening with independents. And also, the last time I went into an independent that I didn't know very well, we're talking about they had some beautiful cases on the wall, as in glass boxes, and they may have had like three lenses in each. They don't carry stock.
No.
You know, if you order something, you've got to wait 2 weeks for them to get it in.
I think that's the one thing that's killing the high street, without a doubt. I mean, I went past a workwear place today and I wanted a new tabard, for orange tabard for a job I'm doing tomorrow. And I stopped and I went in to get it. I said, have you got an orange tabard in 3X? No, we could order that in for you for tomorrow. But my point was, well, I can order it off Amazon tomorrow. and tomorrow's no good. And that's the point, is they're not carrying stock. And when they don't carry stock, that's when you're in demise.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that happened to Jeff Sutz at the end. 6 months ago, even, I can't remember what I went to buy. I wasn't in town. I was somewhere quite a long way away, and the only shop there was a Jessup's. I can't remember what it was, and I went in there, and they had what I wanted. They, let's go out the back and have a look. You know, I've heard in the last few months people have said to me, I went to Jessup's to buy something, and they had to order in. And we're talking about just basic cameras. We're not talking about high-end equipment or strange equipment. They had one in the shop to show people, and it's like, yeah, we'll have to get it from our main warehouse because we don't keep a stock anymore, which obviously when a company hasn't got any cash flow anymore, that's the way they have to do business. But that as much as anything is what's killing it. It's the fact that no one can, and in a funny way the camera manufacturers don't help the situation with renewing their ranges so often that you've got a big camera shop that has to start discounting their ranges 6 months after buying them in because of their old hat now. There's nothing they can do about it. You can't sell a 5100 for the price of a 5200. The moment a 5200 comes out, you've got to discount the 5100. And it really, really, that is part of the problem.
I think that's where the camera market isn't doing that, though. They're not discounting the 5100. They're increasing the price of the 5200.
Yeah.
That's the point. That's why Carl's saying, I got that below 500 quid at 5100. Well, that one is still the same price that Carl paid for it 2.5 years ago. Yeah. But the 5200 now has come in at a higher price, even though the production costs are equal.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
the other thing you're not going to see is I got my Canon 6D recently, and I think it was like $200 off whatever the retail price is, like 2 months after it started shipping. And independent camera resellers, they can't take a $200 hit on a camera like that. They can't do it.
No.
Yeah, maybe the manufacturers should sort of get together with some of the sales teams and say, look, we can only actually take 20 new brands a year between the lot of you. Otherwise you're killing the market.
I mean, Canon was saying that they were still, within reason, willing to support Jessup's with delivery of stocks. They weren't going to walk away from them. But
it was HSBC that had enough.
Mm.
But it's us, isn't it? At the end of the day, it's us. We've decided not to go and shop at Jessup's. We've decided not to go and shop at HMV, not to buy our videos from Blockbuster, not to do any of these things because in the modern age, we're all in a cash-strapped situation. We have the internet and we have massive warehouses in the middle of nowhere which are willing to ship you tomorrow, sometimes even the same day if you like pay an extra £7, for example, the tech you want. And if they let you play with it and let you try it out, and if you don't like it, you box it up and you just send it straight back to them. How can they compete with that?
But they should carry the stock for a start. But
they're never going to. They've got a finite amount of space. They don't.
No, but I agree with you. If you were talking about stuff that was a reasonably niche, Carl, I think I'd agree with you entirely. But I rang up and asked for a 6D body only or kit lens from a second shop, a second Jessup's here in Birmingham. No, we wouldn't carry that. What do you mean you wouldn't carry that? That's a mainstream camera. No. So are you saying you're out of stock? No, we wouldn't carry that. This shop would not hold that ever as a stock item. That's where they've killed themselves, mate. That's my caveat to what you're saying. And the rest of it, though, the mainstream stuff, if you're carrying niche stuff, then I agree you're going to go out of business because you can't carry that much stock. But if you're talking about you're not carrying mainstream cameras, you're going to go out of business for another entirely different reason.
Right. Well, I think someone made the point earlier, too, that the camera companies just releasing new models like every 6 months is killing the, especially for small independent shops. I mean, I'm trying to remember, like, the Pentax PZ1P was their flagship SLR for almost a decade. The Nikon N90 was around for a decade.
N90 was a quality camera. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's still around, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd still buy one of those quite happily just to play with. If Ellie says, look, Dad, I really can't stand the fact that you use Canon, I need to use Nikon, I'd buy him a D90 now.
Yeah.
Definitely.
The Elan 2, Canon Elan 2 was around for I want to say 8 years before the Elan 7 came out, and that was around for an almost another 6 or 7 years before digital cameras just started taking over.
I mean, the thing is with the analog camera...
These high-end, expensive cameras used to be around for a couple of years. So if you ordered 5 of them to be in stock, you knew you might sell them in a year or whatever.
Yeah.
For the more expensive models, or maybe you ordered, whatever. You knew you had a reasonable idea that you're not going to get stuck with, like, 5 $3,000 cameras are going to get replaced in 6 months, and then nobody's going to even look at it unless you discount it so much that you're losing money on it.
Yeah, go ahead, Alex.
But they were, in some way, first of all, there was, the main reason people buy a new camera or their companies bring out a new camera is because of the sensor. Well, you didn't have that. You just put in a different roll of film, which gave you, if you like, the different equivalent of a different sensor. But also, a lot of the high-end cameras in the old days were sort of upgradable. Because if you could get, if you had an old motor drive on your camera, you could actually get the motor drive replaced and get a faster frame rate. There was lots of things that could be done when you went back in time with cameras. Things have changed now that you've got a unit that... Even right. Getting the most minor thing repaired on one of my cameras, I mean, I've seen them take it to bits, and I'm like, I know nothing about cars, and when you open the bonnet, I can at least tell what the engine is. When you open the back of a camera, I haven't got a clue what I'm looking at. It's incredible. So there is no replaceable parts. There's also no real mendable parts anymore either. It's just great big parts of the unit are thrown away, and they stick another one in. It's a whole new ball game. But I mean, I personally... I don't know if I'd like to sell cameras, but I think there is a place for an independent chain which combines the shop with tutorial. So you have a shop, a bit like what Apple do with their, they do their lessons or whatever in the shop. But if you have a shop that sells a certain range of camera, but they are experts in that camera, they're experts in teaching that camera, and maybe 3 times a week you hold a lecture, a seminar, we've got 2 hours on Photoshop Elements today, and we've got 2 hours on how to print your own things at home, whatever. You can build up a community. You'll get people coming in, and they will buy your stuff because they know that camera they've bought in there, they can come in next week, and the person behind there is going to be able to answer not only how to use the camera, but how that relates to the software I've just sold you, how that relates to the other machinery I've just sold you, including the printer and everything else. That's the future of independent camera services. It's going to be more of a whole community place. I would love to open up one of those, but I haven't got the money to do so. But I think you put one of those, put 10 of those around the country, any country you like, they're going to get a reputation, they're going to get a name, and you're going to do business. It's just you've got to offer everything else apart from just selling a camera.
Carl, you had a point?
Oh, I was just going to say, the speed at which cameras now seem to rev is like very similar to phones and computers and stuff. And the problem is, because they rev their thing, they get all the reviews, they get all the press looking at them, and then next week there's something else new and shiny out. So everyone forgets about the previous one. So to get back into the news again, they have to release another rev. And so you get this continuous
like a spiral.
That's it.
Here's another thing to remember too. Like, I'm trying to remember, and it's a little fuzzy, but a Nikon N90 was like considered a top end. It wasn't the top end Nikon camera, but it was like considered a very reliable professional workhorse camera. So we sold a lot of them, and it was like maybe $800 for the body. And what would you buy now? What would be equivalent? Like the D800 is $3,000.
Yeah, it's changed. You know what I mean? So much.
Yeah. And we're talking like 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, there's comments coming up in the chat room about why a camera is still so expensive at the moment. Aren't we being screwed by the manufacturer? And I think there's a part of it is exactly what Carl's saying there about it's the churn of the upgrade path that's causing an issue, because they're having to R&D and make changes to dies and that kind of thing, whereas the existing tool would sit for a body for a long period of time. Certainly in the film era, you'd have tooling set for a very long period of time, which cut your costs right down.
Well, 3/4 of the camera didn't need to change.
No, but also I think the other problem that you've got is that the manufacturers are trying to make money out of a market that's declining, and they're figuring that they're going to make that money by increasing prices rather than making the money through bulk sales and decreasing prices. So,
yeah.
I mean, I would suggest that they would probably make more if they decreased prices, but they wouldn't be agreeing with me with that, I don't think.
No, but you've also got the trouble with the high end does cost them money to build. You know, to build a D4...
Because you sell yes units, though.
Yeah, but it just... The components that go in there are very, very expensive to produce, and it's very expensive to put together. Say a D800 or maybe a D600, because the D800 is quite high end. But if you said something like a D600, you couldn't sell the D600 for, you know, a lot less than it is and make it very cheap because of, all right, a D800, it's so close in spec to the very top end 3, 4, 5, 6 grand camera that if you sold it for £1,500, which you could probably get away with and still make a profit and sell a bucket load of them, the gap between that and 6,000 is not a lot in what it can do, but it's a hell of a lot in money. So you have to artificially keep the middle range camera more expensive, one, to justify the top range of a camera, and two, to make your what are very cheap cameras to make stay cheap. Mm. I mean, the D800 could be a lot cheaper, but who the hell is going to go and buy a D4 if you can buy a D800 for an eighth of the price?
Yeah,
they'll never sell another D4.
Good discussion, fellas.
There you go.
Good discussion. Hipster have created fake long exposures. Basically, they'll take any MP4 that you've shot and they'll run it through a Python script, and the Python script will look for the motion and the static, separate the two, and then glassify. I can't think of a better word, but they'll glassify the motion so that you end up with this fake long exposure. I'm not a great knowledgeable of Python script, but I do know a man who is, and Andy Vaughan, who did the Geek's Badge application for us and wrote the green counter, he went and had a look at this and had a play with it, and he came back very surprised because he was like, oh, that sounds interesting. Went off, and an hour later he wrote back and said, bugger me, it works. And he's taken it to 4 MP4s that he shot himself, and it works perfectly. As long as your camera is static, any motion that goes past the camera, this thing will blur it perfectly.
But it's been done before, I'm afraid.
Yo, come on then, Alex. Back when you were a lad.
No. CS5, it's called stacks. That's all it is. You build your stacks, you turn them into smart content, and then you just do a mean, which is an average of them. And what it does is anything that's not moved is cut out and kept clean, and everything that has moved is just layered on top of each other, and they get an average opacity between the layers, and that's what you get. It's just stacking.
Yeah, but that's stacking from stills, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's the same thing. I mean, what they're doing with video here is that if you take 50 stills, you know, you could do it on a burst frame and do it, well, obviously not at the speed of film can do it, but you're doing exactly the same thing. You've got frames that progressively change. As long as parts of the image aren't changing, you stack them. I use stacks only to minus things. So I can take, an object which is in a crowded area, say Trafalgar Square is a good example. I take 50 shots of it, I let it stack, and it just deletes anything that isn't in different stacks. And in the end, you end up with an empty Trafalgar Square. Now, if you did it the other way and kept everything that was moving as well and put them on top of each other, you'd get an absolutely full Trafalgar Square, but Nelson's Column would still be static in the middle. And all this is doing with the water is exactly the same thing. It's layer upon layer upon layer, and then using blending modes to just average out the water. Everywhere it's moved, you get another piece of water, which makes a glass effect.
But this looks like real motion blur to me. I haven't worked enough with stacks to really say that it would look exactly the same. But I am suspecting, like my skeptical mind says, it wouldn't look quite like this effect.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I found this quite interesting because it works on existing MP4s. It'll take your MP4 video, and using the script, it will make a long exposure from it. So I think that separates it from the static shot element, although the static shot has been done then, as you said, in stacks. But
Here you go. Anders UK in the chat room. I'm going to read this.
Anders.
Alex is correct. So, Anders, you're the man. It is a sort of stack, just some alpha layering, a running average. Water works well because it's a single directional moving object. So well done, Anders. Not only do you know what you're talking about, you agreed with me, so you're the man.
So, Andy, just before you... I mean, this is going to be a crap way of answering the question on a podcast. So are you saying that it works well with water, but it doesn't work well with anything else? And we'll have to wait for that answer to come back now, because there's a huge delay.
Okay, well, we'll get the answer in a minute.
Just talk amongst yourselves for a second. He has said he hasn't tried it with anything else. Oh, right, we'll go away and try it with something else and then come
he's
back.
He's looking at the code.
Oh, he's okay. A genius. He really is a genius. Well done, mate.
So is this something they could put in an iPhone, for example?
Yeah, there's no question. Of course they could, yeah. Absolutely.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's not some app that we've overlooked that does some part of this anyway. You know, I mean, it's a sort of thing that if this takes off, then you're going to have some app that's got this as a functionality.
That'd be cool, because I do like those pictures where it's like a waterfall and it's all glassy. I do.
Well, you know, the other option is to actually learn how to take a picture of your 5100, and you could do that anyway.
How to take a long exposure.
So moving on.
So moving on, I can't get the bloody picture off. I hate this. Bloody websites have got this ability to stop you from dragging a picture off nowadays. Bastards. There we go. This is BRNO have created a dehumidifying body lens cap for your Nikon.
Good idea.
So basically, it's this is a lens cap that fits over the front of your lens or the front of your body, and it's got presumably the silica gel stuff in it that you get in most packaging.
That's right.
And it just draws the moisture out of your camera and holds it and saves it going mouldy and horrible on the inside. I've got to say, in 20 years of photography or more, I've never had a camera go mouldy because I freaking clean them and look after them.
Well, it's not mold. I never knew it could do that.
No, it's not mold that the problem is. I'll tell you what the problem is, and this is gospel. I had a conversation akin to this yesterday before I ever saw this. I was talking to my dad, and we went somewhere, and I used one of his old cameras that I hadn't used forever. It was a 5.4, but it had a special lens in it. I hadn't used it for a while. And I remember the last time I used this, I took it into a customer. And it was like yesterday, it was minus 10 outside and plus 50 inside the flat because it was an old person's flat, right? And in the old days, I used to take the camera and I used to have to leave the lens there for literally 15 minutes because it was going to steam up, it was going to be full of moisture because of the change of temperature, much like your glasses do. And you could put it on the camera, but it would still, because it's a big metal lens, it would still get cold again. So there was a whole palaver about getting this thing not so much drier, just acclimatized to the room you were in. Now, I pulled it out yesterday and there was nothing. And I was like, oh, what have you done? And he pointed out that it's a different car. And what happens in this car, it's an estate car. So the air conditioning and the heat and all the rest of it goes around the whole car. And then when I used this before, it was a different car that had a boot or a trunk, as they would say on the wrong side of the Atlantic, which didn't, obviously, because it wasn't part of the main cabin of the car. It was bloody freezing, and that was the problem. And I was talking about, oh, wouldn't it be good if you just had something to keep the moisture off your camera all the time? Because if you were walking around the street, for instance, with it in a rucksack, and you went into a customer, it would freeze up, and you'd get all this moisture and all the rest of it. I saw this today, and my first thought was, that's a really good idea, because that would solve exactly the problem I was talking about yesterday if you were walking around with it in a backpack as opposed to in an air-conditioned car. So I quite like the idea of this.
A bit pricey, though, isn't it? $45 for two bits of plastic and a silica gel envelope thing?
See, you're money, not a no professional. Yeah, no, but the thing is, you're not a professional photographer. We are so used to being screwed. You know, it's like $45. Oh, wow, there's not a note on it. I better buy it.
How did Jessup's go out of business, really?
Yeah, well, that says they were the amateur market.
I've just all I can say is hand on heart, in 20 plus years, I've never had moisture build up on the inside of my camera, and I would spend most of my life in a field. I'm going out tomorrow to shoot a bridge renewal in London, and it's pissing down with snow at the minute. and it's going to get freezing cold, and there's still not going to be any moisture inside my camera. So,
or as Teresa just points out in a chat room, it takes a woman to spot the obvious. Just keep the silica gel packs full of stuff you order and put them between the cap and the lens.
No, she's talking about Teresa.
You're going to be a rich woman there, I'm telling you. You're going to be a rich woman.
And don't eat yellow snow.
Who's this fungus that we're meant to be protecting our lens from? You go around nicking them.
Yeah, he's that Irish bloke fungus. Right, I think we're done. We haven't got any questions this week. This is the first. Oh, you got a question? Go on then.
Well, no, it's pretty. You probably answered this a ton of times, but as it's snowing down like you wouldn't believe here in the UK at the moment, why does it, when some people take, and I've seen it today actually, why they take pictures of snow, the snow comes out grey?
This is a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Go on then. I'll try and argue with you if I can, but go on.
Okay. So,
And his line breaks up just as he starts to answer. Go ahead. Try again.
Okay, so, excuse me. In general, the way that the camera meters are designed to work is to take an average exposure. So it looks at all the light in a scene and creates an average. If you have a scene that is almost all white, okay, the camera sees this overabundance of light, and so it tries to tone it down. If you take a picture of a scene that's mostly black, it sees not very much light, and it tries to overcompensate. So you'd get the same effect if you try to take like a picture of a black cat on a black pillow or something. It would look kind of like washed out and gray. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happens when you try to take, you know, a nice snowscape. You've got the bright sky and you've got bright snow everywhere. The exposure will get turned down too low, and it'll be like this kind of like gray, muddy mess. So, you know, and this is kind of a rule of thumb. It's not exactly 100% every time, but typically speaking, when you shoot snow, you want to overexpose by a stop and a half. And when you're shooting something that's all black like that, usually you want to underexpose by about a stop. And you can control that if you're using a, you know, an automatic type mode like shutter priority, aperture priority program. You can use exposure compensation and just dial in, you know, plus one stop, minus one stop. When you're doing it manually, you just have to kind of remember, you know, I need to add an extra stop here or take away an extra stop there.
Yeah, sometimes you can just use the pop-up flash on your camera as well. I don't know why, because it shouldn't work. But quite often when the camera's got a pop-up flash, it changes the metering, and it's not going to make any difference to the snow, obviously, because it's infinitely far away. But for some reason, quite often, that gives you quite a good exposure. I get the same problem when I have to photograph works of art on paper, because if someone's done like a very mild pencil drawing on a piece of paper, even funnily enough, when you try and shoot in manual, your brain does exactly what the camera does. You start underexposing it because you seem to feel that there's a load of whites. So funny enough, if I shoot works on paper, I always have a laptop next to me, because in the back of the camera screen, everything looks a bit grey and insipid anyway. It doesn't look that good. So I always take one picture of a work on paper, if I've got loads of them, put it on the Mac next to me to see how much I've underexposed it, because I've always underexposed it. I don't know why, it's just habitual. Your brain does exactly what the camera does. So Chris is completely right, so I can't argue with him, but it was worth a go.
Carl, any thoughts?
No, I mean, I'm quite easy. I like white snow, grey snow, yellow snow, not so keen about.
My tip for snow is don't be a pussy and use evaluative metering. Use spot metering. Spot meter off the snow and then underexpose by two stops, and then you won't burn anything out, and you can recover it all when you get back in, even if you've shot JPEG, because it won't be burnt out.
I was going to say, is that RAW or JPEG?
No, you can shoot. It doesn't matter whether you shoot RAW or JPEG. I couldn't care less. But underexposed by two stops.
Yeah, he's saying underexposed.
Spot meter and underexposed by two stops.
But, you know, if you're shooting a landscape with snow and you've got a lovely tree, take your metering off the tree, and then the snow's going to come out beautiful and crisp.
It's got blown out, yeah. Depending on how dark the tree is.
Yeah, you should be all right.
I would always expose off the snow and get my meter, and then I'd probably go into manual anyway. And just once I've got something that looks about right, I'd then go from there.
It's pretty hard to focus on snow.
Don't be a pussy. Shoot in manual.
I'm just glad you all answered without saying squeaky toy. That's all I'm saying.
Shoot in manual. Yeah?
Okay. Yeah,
grow some big ones and shoot in manual.
That's the beauty of digital.
I spent the morning in manual. We did get a feedback from David Bracey from last week's question about why everything was out of focus and he couldn't bring it into focus doing lunar photography. And it was, as Alex and I suspected, he'd managed to put extension tubes between his lens and his body and then went out to try and shoot the moon. And it doesn't work, Dave. That's exactly... And he's figured that out now, fortunately. Extension tubes are for bringing the focal length so that you can see things in macro. Okay, because it takes the focal length away from the sensor. He's a lovely bloke. So if you want an extender, a teleconverter or an extender, 2x or 1.4x, stick that between the lens and your body and then you'll get great pictures. But if you've got a 200mm lens, you should be able to shoot that f11 at the moon, 1/100th of a second, ISO 100, and then blow it up and it should look absolutely cracking. So,
yeah.
Don't blow up the moon. That's not good.
It reminds me quite briefly of this Metabone speed booster adapter, which looked quite interesting that we haven't talked about.
Go on then.
Which is,
I thought we talked about it last week. That's why I didn't talk about it.
But. Okay, because this has got, if you can have a negative magnification, it does that. So it's timesing something by 0.7 as opposed to timesing something by 1.5 or whatever, or 2, whatever the normal magnification is. But what's clever about this and what the point of this is what it's doing. It's taking a larger aperture, which is reduced by 1.7, but you've still got the same amount of light that you're getting in the, whatever it is, 20%, I can't work it out backwards, but whatever percentage more light that you would have got from that same magnification. So therefore you've got more light coming into a smaller area, so that actually means that you get a faster lens than you would have done normally. So this again works well when you've got something which is like this new 5200 or whatever with, you know, a quite acceptable 24 megapixel sensor. If you use something like this, you'll only be outputting, I don't know, 16 megapixels worth of picture, but you're going to get X percentage, because I can't work it out backwards, say it's 20% more light on it. So it's speeding up the lens that you're using. So if you're using something that's, you know, 5.6, you're going to get something, I don't know what one stop down from 5.6 is, but it's about one. There you go. So it's about 1.1 or 2 stops down, which is, it's just, it's really weird to see things being done backwards to what we're used to. We're used to seeing things that have got magnifiers on them, which then make the stops slower. For once, someone's actually put their heads together and going, actually, so if we reduce the amount of actual physical magnification you're getting on this, we're actually increasing the amount of light you're getting through for the same aperture, so therefore you've sped up your lens. I just think it's a very clever little idea.
Not cheap, though, is it?
I was going to say, how much are you willing to pay for that then, Alex?
Myself? About $600, I'd say. No, yes. I do think it... No, honestly, I think it's expensive, but now the idea's out there, you will get, you know, other manufacturers coming up with a similar idea, because I can't see how you can patent something that's just blatantly just a lens magnifier, but, you know, a reducer, if you like.
So far this year, Alex has bought a £5 rubber band to stop his lens from creeping.
That's brilliant, though.
He's bought a BRNO dehumidifying body lens cap that a packet of silica gel would have done on its own anyways, as Teresa said. And he's capped it off finally with the speed boosters at $600 a piece.
And he's going to
the idea, the principle. Shop. I do like the principle. Yeah, when I open up my new camera shop and I go bankrupt, none of it will matter.
It won't matter. Well done, mate. Well done. If you've got a question for us, then for God's sake, send it in, because this section of the show will usually last longer that way. It's britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. Send in your photo questions. We'll answer them as best we can if you've given us enough information. If you haven't, then we'll talk around the subject for a while, bullshit our way through it, and then close the podcast, which is what we do most weeks. This podcast and all of the others on the network is brought to you by UK2. We say it every week, but they're going to be... You're going to be hearing this for another year and a half yet, at least. They're carrying on sponsoring our whole network. They pick up all of our bandwidth, and in return, they just expect anyone that listens to British Tech Network to give them a shout, give them a try. Yeah, you don't have to buy from them. If you don't want it, that's fine. If they're more expensive, walk away. That's okay. But I think you'll find their prices are pretty keen. And do bear in mind that every time you purchase from UK2 and you use our click-through from our website off the sponsors page at britishtechnetwork.com and you use the offer codes, you get great deals with the offer codes, but you also reinforce this network, because we wouldn't be able to keep pushing out all of the podcasts that we've got. The bandwidth would be horrific. £400 a month is the tune to which UK2 support us. So please support them. They're a really nice firm as well. It's not just the fact that they give us unlimited bandwidth. It's the fact that they're a nice bunch of people as well. Craig's a great bloke. So please support UK2 if you possibly can. Thank you very much. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Forsman?
You can see my brilliant, unadulterated writing on Ars Technica.
Glad you finished that sentence.
ArsTechnica.com. And I'm also on the Twitters, even when I'm sick.
You have been a bit quiet lately. Alex was just saying before we started that you've been a bit quiet.
I've not been feeling great.
No.
But I am. You see how I am now. I'm about 1,000% better. So that's
good. See if you can wash that green tinge out of you, mate. You look like the Green Lantern. Kelly would be proud. Mr. Madden, where are you, mate?
I'm on Twitter at Clausier101, also on The Media Show on this very network.
Yep.
And on the Here and There Show somewhere else.
Well, what's the link? Here and There?
Oh, yeah, just Google Here and There. We're quite close to the top now, if not the top one. So.
Oh, excellent. Good man. Well done. And Alex, where are you, bud?
I'm on The Media Show. I'm on The Photo Show. I'm on The Big Show, occasionally on The Mac Show. In fact, I do everything that's ever been done on the internet. I'm responsible for it. But if you really want to get me personally...
There's a lot of stuff on the internet, mate. And we proved that before we started The Big Show last night,
I'll
mate.
I tell you what, I'm never watching the BBC again. what was I saying? Alex G. Fox. See, he got me again. I've got to stop this. I get too embarrassed too quickly. Alex G. Fox on Twitter. Please be kind.
We'll be back in a minute with The Mac Show, and Alex G. Fox is not on it.
Hey,
it's the only show on the network this week he's not on. Have a good weekend. Send us your pictures. Get loads of snowy pictures. Send us some nice snow pictures and we'll put them up. See if you underexpose or overexpose. I reckon the underexposers are going to win. Mm-mm-mm. Have a good weekend. See you all. Bye.
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 Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.